Welcome to This Andorian Life, a Star Wars podcast from the Radio Meanwhile Network. My name is Steve Rudd.
I'm Nick Gunning, and I'm back, baby. I had a good time over. Kendra and I did an episode of 90s music where we talked about Return of the Mac. Do you know that song? Did you listen to it?
I told Kendra that I think I told her that I was going to look it up because I probably recognize it, but not the name.
You didn't.
And I didn't. I completely forgot.
Okay, that's all right. I was on that, and then I did a Spider-Man X-Men crossover on Previously on X-Men with Allie, who's my co-host on the Library Podcast, But Have You Tried? And she doesn't know anything about those Spider-Man or the X-Men, so it was a pretty good time.
Oh, that's good.
I thoroughly enjoyed all of our April Fool's Day swaps, so I hope everybody popped around to the different shows and listened, because they were a good time.
It was fun. It was definitely fun.
What show do you want to be on next year? Because you stayed here. You held down the fort on Andorian Life.
I don't know, man. Okay. I mean, I've been a part of 9021 Here We Go by being part of Sharknado.
Of course.
Maybe previously on X-Men.
Yeah.
I'd like to be a part of that.
I think that could be arranged. Oh. Well, anyway, this week, our journey through Star Wars Vintage brings us to Droids.
Droids. Today, we are discussing Droids issue number one, The Destroyer. This issue hit the stands in February of 1986. We boys.
Correct.
We
this issue, like the Ewok comics, was written by David Manick, but it was illustrated by John Romita Sr. More on him in a moment. This issue was collected in softcover by Dark Horse and Star Wars Omnibus Ewoks and Droids. And in the UK, it got a special little standalone released. It was published as The Droids TV Special, I think trying to tie it in a little more clearly with the show. Because the home video releases in the US versus the UK were different as well. And it seems like the Droids, like PAL releases on the UK format, circulated a lot more than anything we got in the US. So I don't know. Maybe it was more popular over there. Who knows?
I guess so.
Our featured crew member this week is John Romita Sr. This issue was illustrated by an absolute legend, John Romita Sr. He did some early work for Atlas, Timely, and DC Comics before settling at Marvel, where he's best known. First, he was on Daredevil, then on to Spider-Man, where he left a lasting mark. He took over the Spidey title after Steve Ditko, who was the original Spider-Man creator, left the book and injected some romance into the plots.
Ooh.
He co-created the character of Mary Jane Watson, who has remained steady in the comics to this day. And we will definitely talk about John Romita again, because his career is epic.
It's just, yeah, it's big.
Yeah, and it's funny looking at this, because he's got a real, I don't know, he's got a real recognizable art style, and I did not pick up any, like, oh, this is John Romita art from this. It looks very much like the cartoon. It doesn't really stand out as particularly good or bad. It's just, you know, it just is what it is.
I thought the boy Jost Elon, I thought his face looked very familiar as far as, like, little kids go in comic books. Like, I felt like I've seen that, like, style of faith before.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, but I was surprised that this was John Romita and not Warren Kremer, who did the Ewok stuff, because it has a very, like, early Harvey Comics, Richie Rich, Casper the Friendly Ghost kind of vibe. So they're like, like the round cheeks and everything. So who knows? Who knows? But interesting nonetheless to have John Romita Sr. on the book.
Very cool.
Okay, first Droid Comics. Here we go. I'm ready to dive in.
I'll take us out. The uber-detailed plot of Droids 1, The Destroyer. C-3PO and R2-D2 are en route to their new master, Lot Kemp, on the planet Dodds. Other droids on the transport laugh at them, claiming the planet is desolate, but 3PO assures R2 there are people there. When they arrive, they find their new master's homestead completely destroyed. A local scavenger boy, Jost Elon, confronts the droids and informs them that Lot Kemp was imprisoned by Governor Kug for not paying his taxes, while Kug's destroyer droid destroys his home, aptly named. Masterless, the two droids lend their aid to Jost. At the governor's mansion, we find that Kug has a devious plan to squeeze more taxes out of the planet by threatening the monthly council meeting with his destroyer droid. Back at Jost's hideout, 3PO and R2 find out that Jost's parents were killed by Governor Kug. To help Jost make some money, 3PO aids in appraising some of his junk when they find an old Ranger X-1 defense robot that was outlawed long ago. With his new robot, Jost can repel Kug's tyranny. At the monthly council meeting, Kug delivers his news to a defiant council. That is, until Kug's destroyer droid blasts through the wall, causing the council to submit. Jost shows up with his X-1 too late to help the council, but it matters not as the council refuses to allow the X-1 to interfere in case it brings more suffering. They would rather pay Kug instead of resist. The next day, the council brings the increased taxes from the planet to pay Kug. Jost and his X-1 interrupt the meeting, and the destroyer droid and Ranger X-1 robot begin to fight. At first, the X-1 has the upper hand, but quickly, the more modern destroyer droid overpowers it, which allows the destroyer to strike Jost, hurting him badly. Before the droid can land final blows on the incapacitated X-1, R2 bursts onto the field, launching tethers to both the destroyer and X-1, quickly transferring power. The X-1 immediately strikes back at the destroyer, overpowering it. In a last-ditch effort to defeat the destroyer, the X-1 bear hugs the massive droid until it explodes, leaving the now permanently incapacitated X-1 statuesque and resolute against the moonscape. R2 miraculously survived the explosion, but was too badly damaged to be repaired on Dodds. Both droids say goodbye to their new friend Jost as they leave on a transport to repair R2. Despite everything, 3PO is deeply proud of R2.
Yes.
Roll credits.
We bond.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to tell you right off the bat that I had a pretty good time with this. I liked it.
I liked it too, and I think this one was too short. I don't know the length. I know I've said that before, like it would benefit if it was longer.
Yeah.
But this one, I was just like, oh gosh, like,
yeah.
Wait, that's it? Like, that's yeah. it? And we hardly got to see the destroyer destroy stuff, you know.
Yeah, it was true.
Just like where all the action happened off screen. It's like, well, I wanted to see that. Like, yeah, you know, I wanted to see destroyer droid doing his thing.
Yeah,
it got personal real quick with the kid, you know.
It did.
And everything. So
I did have the same thought when it ends and they're like, okay, well, we're off. And I was like, oh, they're leaving, you know.
Yeah, I was like, wait,
and like on the one hand, I agree that felt very abrupt. But one of the things that drove us nuts about the cartoon was like, why are we still with Thal Jobin for 4 episodes, you know?
Yeah.
And so I guess it's like, I can't complain now that they're doing more episodic stuff. But I will grant you that it did feel a little bit rushed. They dropped a few things in here that I didn't know about. First of all, they're on a transit from the Intergalactic Droid Agency. As if it's some cleaning service where you can just like hire a droid. I thought that was weird and
yeah.
didn't really talk about it much, but that's the ship they started on. And I assume that's what picked them up in the end.
I think that's what picks them up at the end. Yeah. I think it's.
Yeah. Even the droids, this gig economy, you know, they're just. There was that. And C-3PO also says that the X-1 was discontinued with the establishment of the Intergalactic Law Agency.
ILA. That's it.
So I thought that was like, oh, is that a thing? I've never heard of that thing before, that there's some sort of like intergalactic law. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I also thought it was lame that both of those new organizations, Intergalactic Droid Agency, Intergalactic Law Agency, it's a very lazy writing with those two names. Just replace the middle.
Oh, no.
Let's get some food at the Intergalactic Lunch Agency. It's right over here.
Do you think they serve oil on the Intergalactic Droid?
I do. I do. Yeah. We didn't see it, but I assume there was a droid harem that we just didn't. We weren't privy to, but I believe it was there.
R2 is part of the Million Mile High Club.
Yeah, he is. He is. Well, he's got no problem picking up mates, as we saw in The Great Heap. So,
bro, it was like,
you know,
he forgot where he was. It
yeah.
was like, oh, okay, this is great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yep. He's having the time of his life.
Gosh.
The color. One thing I noticed about like the John Romita of it all, classic Spider-Man had a lot of things where it was like they're having a conversation, and for some reason, the background is just like bright red. with nothing else. And this had several panels that were just yellow in the background. Like maybe they were inside, maybe they were outside, but the whole background was yellow. And that did feel a little Romita-esque to me.
There are.
Yeah. And the color overall, I felt like still had some of the odd choices that the Ewok does, but like Joe's costume, Kug's costume, it's a little bit more, like the colors are richer, I think.
Yeah, the human characters are very rich in color, and then the robots are more washed out a little bit, which is interesting. Yeah. Like they're kind of like a lavender and a light green, as opposed to like Kug being in his like high-vis pink or whatever, purple. I don't know. I'm not good with pinks and purples. That's like a bright, reflective pink.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. But yeah, like everyone else seems to be like the councilmen look like they're, you know, wearing their Kill Bill outfits.
Yeah, yes, they do look like that.
They're all wearing the same pajamas.
Kind of like the show, R2 and C-3PO are not really like super integral to the plot, though R2 does do the supercharge move on the X-1, which is pivotal. But it's not really their story, which I kind of thought maybe in the comic book format it would be a little bit more. But I do prefer them like helping out a scrappy kid versus like rat tail bikers. So
oh, we got the rat tail bikers in the droid show, and then we get like weird biker gang in the Ewoks episode. Remember that?
Happy to say there's not a single mullet. Yeah, the guys who all look like Andrew Dice Clay rolling in on the party. Yeah. Not a single mullet in this episode, which was pretty good.
True.
Give me the best of the best. What's your Ichiwawa moment?
So mine was that they went with a kid as the the ones that they were, that the droids were helping. I think it works, right? I like that.
Well, that's kind of why we like Kobe and the Star Hunters so much. Same kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just, I think it really works towards a smaller kid audience. For me, it works because it's just, I don't know if the cute is the word, but it's just more, it feels like this is what this should be about. Droids helping, innocent droids helping innocent people, which, you know, the adults don't really seem, you know, what was it?
Manjalpa?
Not Manjalpa. Oh, yeah, well, there you go. Like, oh, they're helping Manjalpa. He's literally like the king of a planet. Then they help some other guy.
Right.
Like the leader of the Mungo trading company. And it's just like,
yeah.
They're literally not helping people that don't have tons of resources.
the droids only help the 1%. That's all it is.
It's just, kind of just like, oh, it's like a kid and his parents are dead and he's scavenging, but he's not really good at it. So he needs 3PO to kind of like tell him which is what's worth money and what's not. And I was just like, oh, that works. That actually is just like a little kid, like, hey, guys, come on with me. You know, like, oh, I got stuff. I don't know how much. Tell me how much it costs, you know.
But the downside of the quick turnaround is that by the end, C-3PO is like, well, good luck being an orphan and living in a trash dungeon. We got to go to the next town. So,
before we get to Okabarks, what's your
usual? Sorry. Yes, you're right. Well, there was a couple of different things. I liked the X-1. I liked that it was, because it's originally presented as just like a box, and you don't really have any concept of what it is. And then it sort of like transforms up into this, like, you know, I like the whole background of like, oh yeah, they sent these droids to kind of help, but that's been discontinued, and now it's just an old relic. So I liked that. I like that they got it working again. And then I liked the use of R2 in the fight, because basically Kug, as you said in the synopsis here, Kug is kind of using his destroyer to keep everybody in check. Yeah. And so the X-1 goes in and is no real match for it. And so the fact that R2 kind of buzzes in and connects to both of them and, you know, does the whole like siphoning gas move.
Yep.
Takes the power from the destroyer and gives it to the X-1. I thought that was a pretty creative use of the droids. And I just liked the idea of like beating this new monster with this old dormant technology. I thought that was just kind of a cool turn.
That's been done in like other shows.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Stuff.
I love it when that happens. When it's,
I do
like,
too.
Just that, because then it's like, well, it's heart, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Battle of Azincourt, the English versus the French, where it was just like 6-1, but they beat the French, like things like that, where it's like, okay, it's older, it's not fully charged, but it sees that Jost gets smacked and he's like, oh, no way. You know, like, you ain't doing that to my little boy. I'm protecting him, you know. And so I thought that was pretty cool. I really did like that.
The Adam West-esque sound effect when the kid gets slapped is WAP. W-A-P. WAP.
Was it?
So, yes. Yeah, that's what it said. Yep. WAP. Kind of what you're saying kind of reminds me of like Star Trek Beyond when they're trapped on that planet and they have to get the, they find the old crashed ship and they have to like get it working again to use it to escape and stuff. It's, I mean, it's a tried and true trope, but it's always fun. You know, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that in a book. Oh, Kvark, though. What do we not love, Steve?
I said it before. There really wasn't much destroying. And
yeah.
And in a short novel, in like a short little serial, couple of pages, like what it probably was like 20 something pages, you know, they did enough with like the destroyer droid kind of like putting the hole in the council's building.
Yeah, you know,
that makes sense. Okay, we get it. The droid is can destroy, but for me, I wanted a little bit more than just like the council. I wanted to see the destroyer like destroying people's houses, doing things that were more personal than a council. Feels very separated from like the society. Like, oh, okay, it's just a council, but like,
yeah,
you know, well, I want to see him being townsfolk, you know?
Yeah. Well, we were saying in The Great Heap that it was like there were too many villains.
Yeah.
And in this, it just felt like Kug, who's just like a pudgy frog, and one droid is just like controlling this whole planet. Yeah. Kind of weird. I did like, I don't know if we covered this or not, but I liked an old man kind of just comes out of nowhere and he's like, no, we must fight. And then he like goes away. Yeah. But I like that moment, but then the guy didn't really play any role in it. So
he was, who knows? His role was the,
you can do it.
Yeah. Jost kind of being like, oh, I guess they don't want to like resist. And the guy's like, no, we must. And he's like, okay, I'm going to do it then. You know?
Yeah.
It was nice that it came from the old guy, but it would have been cool if it came from like R2 or 3PO, like, you know, oh no, you know, like, you know,
or show like a little village uprising, you know, show some like rebels.
Have him go home.
Just the old man.
Help somebody. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I wish somebody would resist. And he's like,
yeah,
I do have the means to resist, and then goes and does it. But like,
yeah,
with that much time, you know, with only like 20, 25 pages to write. You know, they kind of had to flow through.
Well, it's a little hard to root for it because, like, you don't see anything of the town. You see Jost and you see, you know, the pudgy council, like, all in their matching outfits. and you never really get a sense of, like, there's a community or there's a town. It's just like, you know, the grandpa pajama party is caving to Kug and that's it. So I don't know. It's like, you know, in live action or even in the show, you kind of get why, okay, they're not going to hire 50 voice actors to do this, or well, they're not going to draw a million frames with all these characters. But in a comic book, just draw a crowd scene. You know, I feel like just kind of show, it felt so empty, I thought.
Yeah, it was empty. And they did say that it was desolate, and they really, you know, they did a good job of making it.
They meant it. The desolation was clear.
The council building was just like in the middle of like a moon field. Moonfield, like, what?
Yeah,
nothing there. And then there was a hill. There was a hill.
Yep.
What about you? What was your book of arc?
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I felt like overall, like, there's some things to poke holes into, but there was nothing that really stood out as like, oh, that was so stupid. Except a very minor thing in one of the early frames when they're looking for their new master's house. C-3PO has it written on a piece of paper. And I just thought that was really corny. But he's just like, wait, you know,
really?
He's,
I completely missed that.
Yeah, he's just, it's like, I'm like, where did you get paper? Where did you get a pencil? Like, what do you?
Oh, he is. Yeah. That's right. That's what that is. That's
so,
I thought it was like a
dude. I don't know. Just seemed like he'd have that information in his head or something. But he's like, oh, let me check my notes, R2, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's an interesting start. I was more into this than I was like any of the cartoons, so we'll say that. I don't think that we're going to get enough time to settle into it because there's 8 issues of the comic, but 3 of them are a retelling of the original movies. One of them is a crossover with the Ewoks, so we really only get 4 standalone issues of Droids. So,
according to Star Wars, according to the Droids, part 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of drops the, it doesn't look like the cartoon anymore. It kind of drops the premise and it's just the retelling. So
that'll be interesting. Wonder if Yoda will be blue.
Maybe. Maybe. I'm curious to see when we get to the crossover how they do the whole time thing. Are they going to recognize each other? Are they not going to recognize each other? Like, how do you make that work? But
oh, yeah. They're going to be forced to have it set in time. Like, with the Ewoks, right. Is this before the Empire?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess we'll find out.
During the occupation?
I guess we'll find out. But first, it's our annual Star Wars Day Book Club. So for our May the 4th episode, we're going to be crossing over once again with Amanda Smith and How's Things from the David A. Howe Public Library for James Luceno's Darth Plagueis.
Plagueis.
Which I never read. I loved the Darth Bane book, but I never read the rest of them. And I've never read Darth Plagueis, but I've only heard good things about it.
Me too. This is the one that everyone's like, oh, have you read this? What, you haven't? And I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
There's so many to read. Like, have you read the other ones from like the 80s and 90s? Like I have.
Right.
Oh, okay, don't give me a hard time.
Yeah. Have you read The Truce at Bakura?
Yeah.
Because I have.
Do you force yourself through that one?
Yeah.
That was pretty good. Listen, I read The Courtship of Princess Leia and I loved it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's still one of my all time favorites. I really love
Courtship.
That.
Oh, that's a deep cut. Okay. That's not bad. Yeah. That's not bad. All right. So read along with us. You got some time. And on May 4th, we'll be back to talk about Darth Plagueis. So I'll see you then.
I will see you then.
Woo!
This Enduring Life was brought to you by the Radio Meanwhile Network. Other shows on the network include 90s Music Got Me Like, previously on X-Men, and 9021 Here We Go. Share your thoughts on this and upcoming episodes by following us on Facebook or X at Endorian Life. Please rate, subscribe, and share the show wherever you get your podcasts.